Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio, the Patrick and Jeremy show. Welcome to the show, Jeremy.
Thanks, Patrick, for having me on. It's truly an honor.
It is, and one thing I have to get out of the way, because I want to, is I have to show for RBN and co-certified, because I do every show, because I think it's important. So RBN is Free Speech Central. Where else are you going to hear really free speech and really smart guys talk about interesting stuff, okay? So go to RBN and click on the donate button. It's republicbroadcasting.org. Donate, send dollars, shekels, French franc, whatever. And go to the Co-Certified app. Why? Because today's Yom Kippur, okay? It's Yom Kippur. It's the Day of Atonement. So you've got to atone for not knowing the difference between kosher food and non-kosher food. Go and download the Co-Certified app. It's totally our sponsor. So you want to support them. And you want to know whether your food's kosher certified or not. Otherwise, next Yom Kippur, you're going to be busy again atoning for whatever it is the Jews atone for. I haven't quite figured out what they're atoning for. Have you, Jeremy?
Actually, I'm very, very educated on that. I don't want to go too deep, but as a Christian, you know, the Day of Atonement is when Christ, Jesus Christ, atoned for our sins. And the Jews celebrate that in the past, in the Old Testament Jewish law, as a time in the future when someone would atone for their sins. Of course, they don't believe Jesus did that. So our Christian listeners probably know what I'm talking about. But no, I'm very familiar with the Yom Kippur. I don't say it like that because I'm not Jewish. So yeah. And October is a very important month for me as an Irishman. I don't celebrate pagan holidays, but I love the fall. I love when the weather turns cold and harvest and all of that good stuff. But it's interesting how Christian and Jewish celebrations do intertwine.
They do. Well, they do. And also Christian and pagan, you know, they intertwine as well. But that wasn't on our list of prep for today. What's the first thing we're going to talk about? Because you've done the prep. What are we going to talk about today?
The last article I sent you probably could lead us into this. Trump's withdrawal from Syria. We would probably categorize this in that little bucket that you and I have that we throw things in of good things that Trump does. We don't want to be in Syria because the U.S. presence there is actually impeding Syria, Iran, and Russia from stopping ISIS. I mean, would you agree to that?
I would certainly agree to that. You know, it's not just ISIS, but Israel has wanted a divided Syria. They've wanted it to be divided and in the midst of civil war in order to, among other things, give themselves a free hand in Iran or give the Zio America a free hand in Iran. If Syria is not preoccupied with civil war and Iran or Zio or America were to bomb Iran, then Syria could be used, because Syria is an Iranian ally, it could be used as like a forward station for very short range missiles hitting Israel. And the one thing about Israel is no matter how many weapons it has, it's very small geographically. It's very compact geographically, and therefore it's very vulnerable. And so there's a lot of reasons to be glad that Trump is doing this. And I think, you know, there's not very many American troops in Syria, but they are there in large part as human shields because, right?
Yeah, I've heard about 1,000 maybe troops and contractors total.
It's not a large number, and I think they're already leaving.
Yes, and well, there's many reasons. You mentioned a military strategy there, and it's truly one of the reasons. But also, you know, Syria took the Golan Heights. Iran funds Hezbollah, which
you mean Israel took
Israel?
Yeah,
Israel took the Golan Heights in Syria, and Iran funds Hezbollah, which are freedom fighters, to stave off Israel's control of the area. But overall, you know, an overall objective of Israel is the greater Israel, the Inan-Oded plan. And the southern part of Syria there is what they consider their land. So, you know, they want that land. And when did they start taking that? Like the mid-70s?
So the Golan was the 1967 war. 1967 yeah. war, they took it. And then in the 1973 Yom Kippur War, shalom, y'all, on Yom Kippur, the Syrians and the Egyptians, they launched an attack and took back the Golan, took back the Sinai, and it was only because of an emergency shipment of weapons from Nixon and Kissinger at the risk of World War III with the Soviet Union, because the Soviets warned against it. But with this emergency shipment of weapons, the Israelis were able to take back that territory once again, or take that territory once again in 1973.
Oh God, we got a Yom Kippur anniversary here then.
Yeah. So that's...
Yeah.
It's a long time.
But I think the article I sent you in USA Today was lamenting the fact, of course, that Donald Trump's withdrawing, because our Kurdish allies will be left high and dry. Is that what I'm getting from this?
Well, I mean, that's what you're getting from. That's absolutely what you're getting from it. The Kurds have been talked about by people. I mean, they've been talking about for a long time, but in the context of this American escapade in Syria, yeah, they're our allies. They're great. We can't desert the Kurds. Well, who are the Kurds? So,
historically, let me just throw this in, because I'm studying the book of Daniel and teaching it in my Sunday school class. The Kurds are the ancient Medes, as in the Medes and Persians that conquered Babylon when the Jews were under Babylonian captivity. But they're a people without a land for many, many, many centuries now.
A people without a state.
State, yes.
Yeah.
But the Kurds, I guess, are part of Global Homo now to help the USA stifle the Syrian government. Now, am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, I think you are understanding it correctly. So, yeah, the Kurds, they do trace their roots back to one of the, and I'm sure you're right, I'm sure you're correct with the Medes, I wouldn't have been able to name it myself, but... They do go way back. I was myself recently listening to lectures on I guess the Persian Empire or something like that, and they were mentioned in that context. And I'm sure you're right. It would be the Medes. They speak a language related to Persian, so it's an Indo-European language, same language family as English, not a Semitic language like Arabic or Hebrew. So they're related, you know, genetically, linguistically, they're related to the Iranians, but they are distinct from them. And they are a very large ethnic group, and they don't have a state. Now, I did want to differentiate between land and state. So they have areas, lots of eastern Turkey, northern, a corner of northern Syria. It's not a whole lot. A big hunk of northern Iraq, northeastern Iran. And then a little bit of, you know, what's now Azerbaijan, which had been in the Soviet Union. So they were split over these countries. But, you know, the areas they live, they live in their own villages, their own towns. And so unlike, say, white Americans, they actually do have a land. They're not being displaced in general. That's not the issue. It's not that they're being displaced or replaced with... replacement level immigration, but those lands that they live in are all part of other states, so they don't have their own state. And I think that's an important distinction, I think. But yeah, so we hear about them being thrown under the bus. Well, the thing is, over the past probably 100 years, certainly the past 50 or 60 years, they're often used as proxies in, you know, these wars and conflicts in that area. The Turks in particular see them as a big threat because they are a big share of the population of Turkey, and you know they live in this a large area of eastern Turkey, and if they were to become independent, it would be very much at Turkey's expense, right? And of course, that wouldn't be the whole thing. In northern Iraq, they actually now have kind of a de facto state. They have, or at least for a while, they've got a autonomous region that Israel is very much involved in. And, you know, this is viewed with alarm by Turkey, because if the Kurds have autonomy or, you know, independence just on the other side of the border, then that group, or the, you know, the same with northern Syria, if they have military operating, you know, freely on the Syrian side of the border, well, then they can cooperate with their guerrilla groups. One of the larger of which I think is very communist. I think it's called the PKK or something, a large guerrilla group that's fighting for independence for the Turkish Kurds. So it's all very complicated and problematic. And why is it that we should be involved with this?
Well, I mean, we shouldn't. If American forces would just simply totally withdraw and get out of Syria, you know, Russia and Iran and then the Syrian government could take care of ISIS totally. I mean, to Trump's credit, ISIS has been weakened, if not almost all but practically destroyed, because of his policy of not going total war with Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know he launched some missiles there, but that really didn't do anything.
Yeah, that wasn't that big of a deal. So, I mean, if you're Kurdish or you're really, really sympathetic to the Kurds, you can say, well, you know, here you've got this big ethnic group of tens of millions of people, and they don't have a state. They're actually, you know, they form the big majority of the population in these regions, but they don't have a state. You can have some sympathy for that. But of course, in order to create a state, it's going to be at the expense of these existing states, Syria, Iraq, Turkey, Iran, Azerbaijan. And so the formation of a Kurdish state destabilizes an already chaotic region. Is it really worth it? And maybe, like, you know, if they wind up with autonomy within the Syrian state or something like that, maybe that's the best thing. But at the end of the day, like you say, it's just not our business. It's not us to be the arbitrators of this.
No, and if I may diverge just a bit, and I know I've accused you of this, but not accused, but criticized. In biblical prophecy, and the Christians will appreciate this, as will Mark Dankoff,
who is a Christian.
Doesn't show a lot.
Yeah.
In Jeremiah 51, Old Testament book of Jeremiah, there is a prophecy in the future that the Medes, who are occupying the land of Ararat, will ally with the Persians, which is Iran, and the Ashkenazis, which are the Germans, and they will defeat a kingdom of the Antichrist. Now, you can take that with a grain of salt.
So I'm just going to ask. So Ashkenazi is German in the Hebrew language, right?
Absolutely.
Are they are Ashkenazis 6. Referred to in Jeremiah 51 or whatever you just quoted? They're actually referred to explicitly, Ashkenazis? They're referred to in the Bible at all?
Absolutely. Genesis 10, when God divided the races, that's what nation means, is a race, and he gave them their own language. Ashkenazi was a race of its own with its own language, and those are the Germans. Ashkenazi Jew, right? For those of you out in Rio Rondo land, that
Ashkenazi means German in the Hebrew language. That much I knew.
Yeah, so the prophecy is that, you know, the Antichrist, who we all know is evil, is taking over the world, and he's allied with the Jews, with the unbelieving Jews of the end of times. The Kurds, the Medes, who are living in Ararat at the time, Turkey, are going to ally with the Germans and the Iranians to fight against the evil of the world. So, to me as a Christian, this is prophecy that the Iranians are going to be triumphant in the end, and as will the Kurds will eventually, you know, get out of global homo, hopefully, and ally with the German peoples. So, just a little tidbit I wanted to throw out there for a Christian audience who might want to investigate that further.
Yeah, well, I mean,
we don't want to digress too much.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that I wouldn't be that surprised about hearing the Germans referred to in the New Testament, but the Old Testament, which is written many centuries earlier, I'm surprised, but maybe I shouldn't be, that the Middle Eastern people that long ago were aware of the Germans. New Testament time, it wouldn't be a surprise, because obviously they're both the Germans and the Hebrews were under Roman rule, so that wouldn't be a surprise. But so many centuries earlier, to me, it's a surprise. But you learn something new every day.
Well, I love studying the Bible, but let's get on with the articles here.
Okay, is this article pertaining to Syria?
What? No, the one that I just sent you about Trump withdrawing forces from Syria.
Okay.
And leaving the Kurds high and dry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, we're just finishing up on that. That was the last.
So the last comment I'll make on that, just re-echoing what we were saying, if you're talking to normie friends, I think the talking points are, Russia's not bad. Why is Russia bad? Because, you know, because it doesn't allow for gay marriage. You know, why is it bad? What's bad? Because it's not trying to flood its own country or other countries with third world people. What's bad about Russia? I think that's a good talking point. You know, you can say Iran. Why is Iran bad? Because, but the Russia is probably the easiest one. So, because it's a white country, is a white Christian country. Is that why it's bad?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And Iran, you know, there's a push for war with Iran. And to his credit, President Donald Trump did not go full out war with Iran. Now, he flexed a little bit when he got out of the Iranian nuclear deal. I think he flexed on that to appease his ultra, ultra right-wing Jewish base. But, you know, he didn't go. So far, he's not going through with the war in Iran. He even fired a mustache, right? Mm-hmm. But Iran is doing a little flex of their own. Didn't they attack? Well, they were accused of attacking some Saudi oil fields, and I really have no doubt to believe that they did. They caused a lot of damage with just one tiny itty bitty attack.
Well, okay, so first,
if they did it.
Like a little bit earlier, like a couple months earlier, they've been accused of attacking like a Japanese and a Norwegian oil tanker. You remember that? That was from the summer, maybe June.
Right? That was fake and gay, though.
Was completely fake and gay. And so, on the one hand, so for instance, my what do you call it? My 2D waifu, my internet waifu, Tulsi mm-hmm. Gabbard. She was on Neil Cavuto's show, and she was asked about that, and she said, well, yeah, why wouldn't Iran want to do that? Think of all the pressure. I can't exactly quote what she was saying, but all the pressure that Iran has been under, all the, you know, everything that's been done to them, and the Saudis, you know, who were behind 9/11, and the Saudis who have been, you know, behind ISIS, and, you know, the Saudis are having this war against Yemen. So why shouldn't I? So she wasn't saying that Iran wasn't behind it. And Iran may well have, I guess there's two things here. Did Iran do it, or did they merely supply the Houthis with weapons and the Houthis did it? And I'm not in a position to know.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Well, you know, we know that Iran backs the Houthis in Yemen, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a given. If true, interesting, because Iran is basically saying, look, you want to go all out war with us? This is what we can do without you stopping our missiles. That was like basically 5% of the Saudi oil. What if they did 50%? What if 75%? I mean, Iran is definitely a power to be reckoned with, and you know, the U.S. should sit up and take notice.
Well, the U.S. should have known this already. The Iranians aren't the bad guys here, and the Saudi Arabians. Well, one might ask why the Saudi Arabians are have launched this war against Yemen. And again, Tulsi Gabbard, for several years now, has been the only person in Congress, and she's introduced legislation criticizing Saudi Arabia for their war of aggression in Yemen. But here's the thing: you've got Saudi Arabia, the Saudi royal family, and I guess we'll be talking about them a little bit later in the show. But the Saudi royal family and Saudi ruling class—they are Sunni. And they're actually kind of a extremist Sunni. They're Wahhabi Sunni. And I'm not a religious scholar in Islam any more than I am in Christianity, even less so. And as we know, the Iranians are Shiite. And while we think of Saudi Arabia as a Sunni country, it has a very sizable Shiite minority, which I believe is geographically located in the section of the country close to Yemen. And Yemen also has, I believe it's a minority, but it's a sizable Shia minority. And this civil war, which, you know, Yemen had been divided north and south for a long time, and they had also been kind of a proxy in the Cold War. So this strife goes way back, but there is an aspect of Saudi Arabia being wary of its own Shia minority. And the Saudi royal family, why are they legitimate? Why should you have this particular family that is just extracting massive, unbelievable wealth from this territory, and then behaving like such giant, I don't know the word, a word. It's a words. And they're being very bad, and they're doing 9/11 and, cooperating with 9/11 and cooperating with Israel and all this stuff. So Iran are the good guys here.
Yeah, and in the 70s, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, we base our dollar on the petrodollar, right? And the Saudis, off the Saudis' oil. That's a big reason why we're allies with them. And, of course, Jewish bankers, that would explain the Israeli connection. There's another connection, like you said, that we may deep dive into later in the show if we have time, as to why the Saudis and the Israelis are so close, or so tight. Saudi did 9/11, and we're willing to just totally overlook that and support them. That's really odd to me. It's odd to anybody that overlooks that from the outside without knowing any details. But, the majority of the American public, they don't understand all this. They don't deep dive into this. But a lot of people have questioned our allegiance to Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the petrodollar, just to diverge just a little bit into that. So, we actually blew right through the first break, but that's okay. Until 1971, the United States, the dollar was based $35 an ounce on gold. And foreigners could exchange dollars for gold. If they held dollars, they could get gold. Americans couldn't, but foreigners could. Nixon in 1971 closed the gold window. And so the thing is, the dollar was pegged to gold, and then all the other currencies were pegged to the dollar. And you didn't have floating rates. You didn't have to check the newspaper every day to see where the French franc or the Deutschmark were. And so then after that changed in the early 1970s. Because oil was always sold in dollars, that kind of stabilized the dollar. I'm not really sure if it's that. I think there is a tendency to kind of overemphasize the petrodollar, because there's so much trade now, there's so many more countries involved. If I don't think it would be as devastating as a lot of people think if countries started selling oil not in dollars but in other currencies. That's my own opinion, and it's probably a minority opinion. At any rate, we've got about another minute. What's the next article?
Well, just to elaborate on that last article, as far as Iran, there's an Israeli former general that was saying that Iran could attack Israel just as it did the Saudi oil fields. His name is Gallant. Yoav Gallant. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this article in Jerusalem Post, this Jew was saying, well, if the Saudis could attack the oil fields, and if Iranians could attack the Saudi oil fields, they could attack Israel just as easily. And that goes into the narrative of Sean Hannity, that Iran wants to destroy Israel and America and yada, 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 blah, 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 and all that.
Yeah.
So that's why I brought up the article, was that, Israel is very threatened by Iran, and they should be. They very well should be.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Let's go to the break, and then we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
And we are back. And we were talking about, Israeli general was talking about Iran being able to destroy Israel. So here's the thing about the Israelis and Jews in general is they tend to be very paranoid. And could Iran wipe out or cause massive damage on Israel? Yeah, Israel is very vulnerable. You know, the population and the industry, you've got the Tel Aviv, you've got Jerusalem, you know, some little areas in the Negev Desert, which are important. They have their atomic facilities there and a couple of ports, Ashkelon or whatever it's called. Jaffa, you know, a few little areas. And they could be very easily, if not, they could be wiped out with nuclear weapons, which Iran doesn't have, but they could be very damaged even with conventional weapons. So they're very vulnerable. But here's the thing. Would Iran do it? Certainly, as long as the United States is under Zionist control, there's absolutely no way that Iran would attack Israel in any significant way. So they wouldn't, because it would be suicidal. If America no longer supports Israel, then Israel is extremely vulnerable indeed, and not just from Iran. But they're very, very, very paranoid people. That's the thing. And they feel they can't trust anybody. And so they have to make sure nobody has the capability of harming them. And so they go to very, 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 very ruthlessly try to make sure nobody has the capability, because they can't trust anybody and they're not willing to, you know, work on relationships. And so, you know, like we grew up with mutually assured destruction between the United States and the Soviet Union. And yeah, at some point you had to just, you know, trust and verify, but that's not, that, yeah.
There's a mutual thing going on there. I mean, the United States being closely tied in this, if Iran did take out many oil fields in Saudi Arabia, you know, that would cripple oil production in the Middle East. And I don't think the United States is willing to do that. Just like Iran is not willing to attack Israel directly because of the United States. So, I mean, there's kind of a good balance there. I guess that's the point that maybe you were making.
Yeah, well, so Iran is not going to launch a war they're not going to launch a war. They're not going to launch a war against Israel because they would be subjected to massive retaliation from Zio America. And they're not going to launch a war against Saudi Arabia, but they would respond to an attack. And, you know, this is the whole thing. It's almost inconceivable that Iran is going to start a war, but it's very conceivable that Iran could be bombed. You know, just like even like a minor type of bombing like Trump did with Syria, knowing that Syria wasn't in a position to retaliate. Trump could be convinced by, you know, Kushner or people in his military, people in the CIA. Oh, you could attack these facilities and it's not going to start a major war. And he could do it, and it would probably start a major war. I think the Iranians would retaliate to, you know, one of those Syrian-style attacks that's not really meant to, like, when Trump attacked Syria, when he airstriked Syria, it wasn't intended to start a major war, and it didn't. But it was a risk. But I think a similar type of thing would start a war with Iran. I think Iran would likely retaliate, but what do I know? What do you think?
And Trump is very wise in not attacking Iran and in, you know, stopping short of just rhetoric. And I think maybe this is why they're trying to impeach Trump, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, as many things as Trump hasn't done for us, the many things that he add to the list of what he hasn't done is start war in the Middle East.
There you go.
And maybe his reluctance to another Middle Eastern war, specifically with Iran, is why they're going on with this impeachment.
Yeah. Well, I gave Obama credit for not attacking Iran. I'll give Trump credit for the same thing. But we've been having fun, but the time is going by. What's the next article we're talking about?
The whistleblowers. Speaking of impeachments, and this is a good segue, there's another whistleblower. And then also Trump has blocked the testimony. Let me pull up the article. Trump has blocked a key witness in testifying in the impeachment probe. Gordon Sondland. Yes. It's the CNBC article that I sent you.
Yeah, ambassador to the EU.
Yeah, it seems like the Trump administration is fighting back just a bit on this impeachment.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to. I mean, I think he very likely will be impeached by the House of Representatives, and the Senate will, in short order, not convict him, and it'll all be behind him. But I think it'll probably cripple Joe Biden. Trump won't really be that damaged, and it'll probably be a net plus for Trump. That's my feeling. But it is risky, because these people in the Senate, I guess, what was it, Jeff Flake, the Flake? He said there's probably 25 Republicans who would or 35 Republicans who would happily vote to convict Donald Trump, and maybe they would if they felt they could get away with it. But I'm
starting to think that's a flex. That flaky bastard Flake is flexing there. Maybe they would, but I don't think they're willing to.
Maybe not that many, but obviously Mitt Romney and probably Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and a few others. Ben Sasse.
But the whole point is, I think this whole impeachment move is because Trump will not do Middle Eastern war. And I think that's a big reason why we're moving to this impeachment talk.
Yeah, there's a connection. You know, the Russia stuff, I think the Russia stuff has been really important, because not only have they been banging Trump over the head with it for years, for his entire presidency, and this Ukrainian thing is an extension of that, but they've hamstrung his foreign policy. He was elected very explicitly on a platform of making friends with Russia, or trying to make friends with Russia, and they have successfully prevented him from developing any kind of meaningful relationship with Vladimir Putin, who is the number one cool guy that we should be hanging out with. That's what I think.
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay, so what does all of this mean? Are we going to move on to the Democratic horse race from here? Because it certainly has implications.
We will. How does that align with the break? Are we good on the break?
We have another 9 minutes or so.
Oh, excellent. So I wanted to send you this article on businessinsider.com. The article is Power Ranking. Here is the best chance of becoming the 2020 Democratic presidential nominee. And it has, of course, Joe Biden as the his picture is on the front of the article. But I guess let's start with the top. If we go to the article, we'll go to the very bottom. Okay. Let's see. Apparently, Elizabeth Warren is ranked above Joe Biden.
Yeah, makes sense.
So Elizabeth Moneybags Pocahontas Warren is ahead of the pack, and Biden is second. So this is really like this is really stamping down on my prediction that Joe Biden would be number one. I think he is the number one of the establishment. Because Biden cannot get Wall Street. Wall Street said if Biden's the nominee, they will support Trump.
You think so? You might be right.
That's what Wall Street said.
Biden has been pro. I mean, Trump has been good with Wall Street. When I say good with him, he's been popular. Biden was very supported by the credit card industry. And I think Wall Street would probably be okay with Biden, but maybe they very well may prefer Trump because Trump's been very pro-business and whatnot. So, okay, so then what?
Well, according to Business Insider, Senile Joe is number two. And let's see, I'm scrolling down the article. Number three, Bernie Sanders, from Vermont. He's number three. But Bernie... I don't think Bernie's a player anymore. I mean, he just went through major heart surgery, didn't he?
Yeah, it is major. It is major.
Those weren't just stints.
He had a heart attack, and they're admitting it now. He had a heart attack, and he's 78 years old. So it's a big deal.
What I've gathered, you correct me if I'm wrong, all of Bernie's supporters, you would think, would go to Elizabeth Pocahontas Moneybags Warren, but no. The prediction is that Bernie supporters will go to Joe Biden.
Yeah, so here's my take on that. I think, you know, and this is based on like some polling. I think the people who answered the poll saying that the Bernie supporters saying that Elizabeth Warren is their second choice, they probably will go to Elizabeth Warren. I think the ones who say that Biden is their second choice are probably low info people who are saying Biden just because of name recognition, or not all of them, but a greater share. And so I don't think they necessarily would go to Biden in the end. And I don't think Biden will be there to go to, because I think Biden was toast already, but with this Ukraine thing, because it's making him look bad.
Yeah, and those of you out in 40 chess land, maybe Trump did this specifically to cripple Biden. I don't know. I mean, if he did, then that's planned into the impeachment.
Or maybe Pelosi did it specifically to cripple Biden.
Maybe. But either way, I think I was right. I predicted this in the aspect that Joe Biden was, past tense, was the choice of the establishment. But now he's going. He's fading fast.
And I don't think the establishment's behind him anymore. He may well have been initially, but he's been on the campaign trail for 6 months, and he's got foot and mouth disease, which he always has had. And then also the declining mental faculties.
But yeah, according to this Business Insider, you know, he's number two to Warren. And then number three, number four, interestingly enough, is Andrew Gimme That Bag Yang.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's fascinating. So this is interesting. And there's one thing that I was doing a little bit of research. There was an article from Forbes magazine that based on their FEC filings, FEC filings, you know, where they have to say what their, you know, they have to show their own financial holdings and whatnot. Andrew Yang is not rich, according to that. Andrew Yang was a CEO. He was an accomplished executive. But unless he's got his money hidden overseas or something, he is not rich. He is middle class, which is amazing if it's true. But that's Forbes magazine. Yeah, he's not rich. But he is raising big money.
He is. And, well, you know, that's because he's a appealing to the populace. I mean, there's, I think he's taken a page out of the Donald Trump, Stephen Miller approach to campaigning.
Mm-hmm.
He is appealing to the base. He appealed to white people. And, you know, his ideas transcend that of these of the Democratic Party's radicalization that they seem to have went through. So, yeah, Yang as number four, that doesn't surprise me either.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's see, number three.
Number five.
Oh, Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
It's the gig economy. It's the Buttigieg economy, I guess. Okay.
Let me just say that Mayor Pete Buttigieg, he's definitely on par. He's definitely in with assuming the penis of the government, right?
Yeah. Okay, so we know he's gay. Is he fake?
I think he's fake as all get out.
I think he's fake. He's fake and gay, and there's an acronym there. Figure it out at home. Okay, I really don't think he's going anywhere. I think he'll stick around for a while because he's gay, and that's what they do, I guess. But I think, you know, he's like somebody, like he's an establishment insurance policy, and he is. I think he's probably got like CIA ties and whatnot. But okay, moving on, because I want to get this in there. Not talking about Buttigieg, but I want to talk about this. So who's next?
Kabbala Haaretz, number six. We actually moved from top to bottom.
Yeah, so we're moving up. Okay, so
yeah, moving down actually.
And I think she's going nowhere. I disagree with these rankings, but they're interesting.
Well, she's number six. Maybe I made a mistake. We went from Warren, you know, to Biden was number two.
Sanders.
Sanders was three.
Yang four.
Four. Yang was four. Buttigieg was five, and Kabbala Haaretz is number six.
Yeah, and you know, I think Tulsi mortally wounded her back in July, and her polling numbers have been down. They haven't come back. She's a fake black person. She's not appealing. She's not that smart. She says stupid things, and she's getting called out for it. So okay,
What's funny about Kabbala Haaretz is like when she's talking to the peeps, she uses her black lingo. Oh, my peeps. Yeah. And then when she's talking to like Jake Tapper, she talks like an educated white person.
Yeah, but always with a really annoying voice, no matter what. Okay, I'm looking at the article. Seven.
What's seven?
Cory
Booker.
Scrolling.
Oh, Cory Reparations Booker.
No way.
The black. I mean, what does this guy got? Honestly.
Okay, what this guy has is once he ran into a burning house and saved somebody while he was mayor of Newark. Okay, so fine. I'll applaud him for that. That was a personally brave thing to do. But he's not going anywhere. There's already a gay candidate, so they don't need him. There's already a fake black person. He's actually not fake black, but, you know, he's very light-skinned and everything. And, you know, his parents were IBM executives and all this. So there's no place for him.
Yeah, total neoliberal, you know, capitalist. I mean, that's just bottom line.
Okay.
Number eight... Beta male O'Rourke.
No way. There's no way. He's already has been. He's only in there. He's raising money that he can use for a future political race.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I like your commitment. Okay. And then former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, Julian Castro.
Yeah, no way. And people can't tell him apart from his twin brother. He's not smart. He didn't even score well on the SAT, but he got into Stanford anyway. And he says, isn't affirmative action great? Look how well it worked out for me. I only got like a 1230 on my SATs, which for the boomers out there would be 1130 in our days. And yet he got into Stanford. And he says, it worked out well for me. What a stupid thing to say. He's going nowhere. This is stupid. Okay, next.
I don't even know if we should go with the next one.
Okay, Steyer. No, he's just a rich Jew who wants to impeach Trump. Okay, he's.
Oh God.
Senator Klobuchar of Minnesota. Nobody wants her. Nobody needs her. She's annoying. Her staff hates her because she's like a really lousy personality. The only other interesting person is my girl Tulsi Gabbard, and she is going somewhere. I don't know if she's. I would like
Tulsi's swimsuit edition.
Well, wetsuit at least. Yeah.
Wetsuit.
Yeah. And she is going to distinguish herself at this upcoming debate because she's, you know, Syria will be, they'll be talking about Syria. They'll be criticizing President Trump, but she's going to be saying, though, you know, whatever you say about Donald Trump, this we have to get out of Syria, and they're going to be accusing her of being chummy with Assad, and she's going to say that, hey, Iran's not the bad guy, Saudi Arabia's the bad guy. She's going to be very much distinguish herself, and I think she's going. So I think she's going to be in this race. I think Yang's going to be in the race, and we'll see what happens. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard is not raising much money. But
would you agree that in this Business Insider clip here, the little picture of Tulsi, I mean, she's kind of hot.
She's very, very hot. Okay,
it's so superficial, but I mean, we're men.
But here's the thing. Okay, so A, if she gets some momentum, the women are going to vote for her because she's a woman. They want a woman already. Okay, and she, the men are at least going to look at her, and while they're looking, they may listen, and if they listen, they're going to like it, a lot of them. All right. Okay. We must be at the break by now. We are. So let's come right back after the break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Folks, this is very important information. What's to be said about CBD? AncientLifeOil.com. Our CBD is made from hemp and has 0.003 THC, which means this wonderful product won't get you high, no matter what amount you take. What does CBD do for the body? My hands are tied, but you can Google CBD benefits and be astounded. When you're finished reading, you'll want to log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. And purchase. Life is good when you feel good. People are tired of pain. People are asking for non-GMO organic products to help them with, you fill in the blank. Legal in 49 states, and again, our CBD is made from hemp. Ancient Life Oil is about helping people, one by one by one. If you wonder how good the product is, the CEO takes it every day without miss. AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Have a great day.
And we are back. So, yeah, that was fun talking about all that stuff, Tulsi Gabbard in particular. Well, all right, but let's move on. Everybody knows I have a crush. So we are going to talk now about the Noahide laws and this, David Icke and the Sabbateans, and go for it.
Well, we don't really have a lot of time on this. Maybe next time we do a show, we can do a deep dive on this, but I've heard a lot of the listeners into Stormfront and into Farron's alternative media show talk about the Noahidic laws. And then I was turned on to the Sabbateans. Now, again, we're not going to have time to go really deep into this, but apparently the Sabbateans was a cult started by Sabbatai Levi Ogilvie, a Jewish rabbi in the late 17th century. And,
and where was he? In the Ottoman Empire? Is that where he was? Where was he?
Let's see. Nathan of Gaza, Jewish diaspora. Well, let me bottom line this.
Okay.
The Sabbateans basically were Jews in the Ottoman Empire that were forced to convert to Islam, and they became the Saudi Arabians. That's the narrative. I have not researched this. Don't hold me to it. But that's the narrative. And there's a very famous YouTube personality, Ike, David Ike.
Yeah, he's been around for a while. He used to be a soccer player, and then he was a sports commentator in Britain. Then he had kind of like a mental breakdown. On air was saying he was Jesus. And then he came back as a rather distinctive conspiracy guy. So what about
David? Well, I know Jesus personally, and he's not Jesus. But
okay.
I will say that this ranks to me, this whole David Icke thing, it smells of someone who is trying to pull the blame off of the Jewish narrative and off of the JQ and say, well, the Saudi Arabians are the real Jews. That's what it looks like to me, but I mean, I don't want to be premature here. I want to deep dive on it maybe on our next episode of Jeremy and Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
But it would explain the deep relations between Saudi Arabians and the Israelis, if indeed there were Jews that converted to Islam that make up the Saudi family.
Mm-hmm.
It does make sense, but I don't want to put anything out there.
Well, I tell you one thing. It's the type of thing that we could get to the bottom of with some genetic testing. And here's one other thing. Let's just say it's not true. The Saudis and the Israelis still have a tight relationship. So it's just something else that's explaining that tight relationship. It's not necessary to explain that relationship, but we'll be open-minded.
Money. Yeah, totally money. I mean, Jewish bankers and the petrodollar and all the stuff we went through earlier. And as far as the Noahidic laws.
Mm-hmm. Noahide laws, yeah.
Noahide. Thank you, doctor. The Noahide laws, and this was mentioned by Frank from North Carolina. We should be paying attention to this, and I agree. Apparently, in the future, and this kind of goes along with the protocols of the elder learnings, the learned elders of Zion, the Noahide laws is basically a situation where the Jews establish a global critarchy where anybody that's not Talmudic, that doesn't buy into the Talmudic religion, can be put to death. Specifically Christians, and that this critarchy would be established in the nation of Israel in the future, where basically Israel has a Supreme Court of the world. I'm sure you're familiar with this.
Yeah, I am familiar with it, and I had a furniture repair guy who was a Chabad Lubavitcher. He gave me a pamphlet on Noahide laws and thought it would be...
He thought I'd
really like it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So, there are people who are talking about this for sure. But these people, these like the Chabad Lubavitchers, yeah, a lot of the stuff that they say and they think is really reprehensible, and they have a certain amount of influence. They've got Jared Kushner in the White House, so you can't just dismiss it out of hand. But the real Jewish power is elsewhere. It's in Hollywood, and it's in academia, and it's in banking, and it's in a lot of other places. And they might not be as reprehensible in terms of what they spout out loud, but to me, they're more dangerous.
Yes.
Thank you so much, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bureau Radio.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.